Howdy, partners. For the third time since its debut, the Formula One Rodeo circles their wagons on the plains outside Austin, the quirky live music capital of the world, in the Lone Star State of Texas, at the venue known as the Circuit of the Americas for the United States Grand Prix. For 3.4 miles, our buckaroos will climb a hill to the first corner, then flow through some fast sweepers, a blind corner at turn 10, a hairpin at 11, then through the straight to the final sector of the track, which features a downhill multi-apex corner and a pair of left bends to the end. Hoo-wee! Add in the fact that the drivers and teams get the honor of being in the land of the free, and that sounds like a rootin' tootin' good time. Not joining the showdown are Caterham and Marussia. The two broke-back teams were left behind and are not taking part in the event. Running only 18 cars changed the qualifying procedure. Sorry, y'all. At the head of this year's shootout, we find, wearing the white hat, Nico Rosberg, and wearing the black hat, Lou Hamilton, who won the first year here. Both of these here two gunslingers drive for the winning constructor, Mercedes-Benz AMG. Pour me a frosty sarsaparilla, belly up to some barbecue brisket, and then stay tuned, listeners. This is Daisy Ray, your Formula One filly, and this is your F1 Weekly USGP Racecast. Y'all come back now, you hear?
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. Qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Park Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 667, November 9th, 2014. Nasser?
Howdy, folks. Welcome to the Tejas edition of Grand Prix and Grids podcast. Back to you, Cowboy Clark.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, it's going down to the wire. The Fernando saga continues. Sutil out. Gutierrez out. Marussia gone. And Caterham? Well, they're selling raffle tickets. Stay tuned for Motorsports Mondial with the King. We've got 50 words from the F1 Weekly Forum, and we got special interview with Logan Sargent from beautiful sunny Florida. Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Always a pleasure to take a trip to Texas, enjoy southern hospitality and mighty fine steak.
Did you go to Crawford?
No, sir. I was in a very interesting place. I asked the lady, what is the name of this town? She goes, Hempstead, and it was somewhere between, I flew to Houston and then drove from there, so it was somewhere between Houston and Austin, so it was fun. I had a very good time.
Okay, I'm glad, but just to let you know that they have an airport in Austin.
Yes.
Okay, just information.
Bergstrom Airport, and that's where I flew in last year, senor.
Okay, but hey, Houston, it's just as good.
Yeah, just so you know, my boat from Shanghai did not come here 2 weeks ago.
Well, I'm glad you flew into Houston. Maybe you could run into the bushes or something.
Very good idea, I must say.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But yes, this is actually a special Nasser went to the U.S. Grand Prix edition of the podcast. Obviously, I couldn't go because of internal affairs and issues. Yeah, we want a full press release from the King of Karachi.
Well, I have to say, this was my second trip to the United States Grand Prix in Texas. Of course, I've been to all the U.S. Grand Prix at Indy, which I enjoyed very much. And, you know, my experience has been very good, Clark, and it's a fantastic track. In two trips there, I spent all my time at the track, so I really cannot talk about the city of Austin, but I hear it's mighty fine, and the downtown area is very nice. But as far as somebody is trying to go to a racetrack, especially fans in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico who have never been to a Formula One race, I think this is a great facility. It's wide open. You know, Texas is big country, and there were some issues with parking is very expensive, which it is. You know, right next to the track, there's a small highway, and there are private parking places you can park and pay $20, $30, and they provide a free shuttle. The staff at the track, just like at Daytona, you know, very nice, very cooperative, and it's a very nice experience to go to a major racing facility and have a good time. And I'll tell you, man, the thing that really hit me first on Saturday was the big crowd. And I said, you know, this is very good. You know, these people keep talking about Formula One needs to be won over by Americans and needs to be as popular as, you know, other major sports. That's not required. It never will be like NFL or baseball. Doesn't need to be. But if they keep doing a Formula One race at one particular track, in this case, this is a very, very nice track. It has features from Hockenheimring. The first turn is like the Austrian Grand Prix turn. Also reminds me pretty much like the Brands Hatch when you go to Druids Bend or whatever it is called, Paddock Hill Bend, you know, goes down, goes up, makes a U-turn. So it's a fantastic racing track. A great job by Hermann, the German Tilke. A nice location, nice weather. I would really, the only thing I would say, and, you know, I was thinking about not saying on the podcast, but we, you know, we want to, you know, it's like the program on some network firing line. You want views from both sides. But season is coming to an end, and I really don't want to be in moan about it. But I have to say, Clark, the sound of these cars. I kept thinking about you during the race, and you know why?
Because I can't stand the sound of the cars.
No, I was thinking I was where the cars were coming up to the first turn. And I said, man, if Clark Rogers was sleeping here in his tent, he won't even wake up with this sound.
But just think of all the money that's saved when you don't need ear protection.
No, Clark, you know, the sound is what attracted me to this sport. I mean, for me to go to a Formula One race and hear the Hoover 500, I'm really not interested. But, you know, there is GP2, Hapetres, and other series. And I do love the sport still. And, you know, there is tremendous history here.
Excellent. So what days did you go to the U.S. Grand Prix?
Clark, I could only go Saturday, Sunday, and that was it. You know, my problem right now is I'm out of base. I have very little vacation time. So I'm trying to save as much vacation as possible so I can make a run to Europa in April, which is the next big agenda for me.
Well, good for you. Well, let's start with qualifying. Obviously, I apologize to all the listeners. Our podcasts have been late. You've been busy with the calendar. It is what it is. Obviously, this podcast will be published after Brazil, but the season's almost over. No crime, no problems.
And our family members are very, looks like they have all taken a course from Mother Teresa's Compassion Clinic.
Correct.
Yeah, we don't get a lot of those digital slings and arrows any. And I'm sure we've cleaned up our act quite a bit also.
You think so?
Well, you know, the NASCAR Fun Hour has been totally deleted from the show.
That's true. We've decided to respect the caution and the tire fire.
And the missing Dale Earnhardt suit.
That suit was retrieved and recovered thanks to our 1-800 number.
Yeah, exactly. I remember that very well.
Yes. So, yeah, let's talk about qualifying. Pretty exciting stuff. Pole for Rosberg. But the other thing I want to talk to you about, obviously, this is the first race of the season without Marussia and Caterham, an 18-car grid. Did that affect the quality of your experience?
I did not even know that those cars were missing, frankly speaking. I mean, okay. You know, the focus when you watch a race, and even on TV, you know, it's always on the top drivers, the top teams. Ferrari will always be in focus. But obviously, it's very sad what has happened with Marussia, especially with their tragedy in Japan with Jules Bianchi and also, you know, Caterham. It's just a different world, you know, what's happened, the way these things are going on. And, you know, I always thought, you know, when these new teams were given the franchises, there was a lot of talk of cost-cutting and this and that, which never came into play, so that affected. But, you know, the way this whole thing has been for many, many years, Formula One and FIA with Bernie Ecclestone and his friend and his own lawyer from days gone by, heading FIA, when they did not give the franchise to David Richards, and a franchise was given to Ken Anderson and Peter Windsor, I mean, I really had some serious doubts, you know, how this thing was. David Richard has been, first of all, he's been in motorsports all his life. Fairly successfully, ProDrive has been in business for a long time. He at one time was heading the Bar Honda team, if you recall. And for this guy not to get a franchise, and I think his crime was that he was at that time trying to run a customer car from McLaren, and we all know how much love there is between Ron Dennis and Max Mosley.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it just, they really need to, the way I'm reading, you know, the powers that be, Bernie Ecclestone, they really don't care. I mean, as long as they are making half a million to a billion each year more than the previous year, they don't care if there are 5 teams or 10 teams.
I agree with you completely. So get your raffle tickets.
Yeah, there. Caterham is looking for cloud funding.
Yes, I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. You know, that thing, amazing, they sold this team, and now it's first of all to mysterious Swiss and Middle Eastern investors. Okay, that's fine. People want to stay private. Fine, I understand. But then it turns out that the shares were not transferred because they didn't pay the bills, the new owners, that is. So it's finger-pointing, and it's just complete disaster. I feel sorry for all the people who are losing their jobs, and the way it's going down is pretty pathetic.
Exactly. But it is what it is, Nasser. On the 2015 entry list, I have to admit, Manor Racing is down there, and Caterham is still down there. So I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't think Caterham has a chance of, well, they say they've already raised $1 million, £1 million in 48 hours. So they could raise, they may be able to raise enough money to get them to Abu Dhabi. But after that, it's curtains.
Yeah. And we're not talking iron curtain here.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's talk about qualifying at the United States Grand Prix Q1. Of course, we have 4 cars in Q1, 4 cars in Q2. Jean-Éric Vergne. Esteban Gutierrez, who's fighting to stay in F1 by any stretch. Sebastian Vettel and Romain Grosjean are out in Q1. Obviously, Sebastian Vettel, engine change, starts the race in the land of the pits.
Yes, and I'll tell you, it was pretty obvious that, you know, Nico had the pace in Austin. And I mean, I was at one of the corners in qualifying, during qualifying, and LCH was really doing a lot of rubber burning, you know, smoking the tires quite a bit.
Yes.
And with him, you never know if it's a problem with the tire or he's being a pushy Paul, which he is, you know, very aggressive driver.
Yes, pushy Paul is my neighbor.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Out in Q2, Pastor Crachado. Sergio Crachado Perez is P12, Nico Hülkenberg P13, and Daniel Kvyat, P14. Unusual for the Toro Rosso. Daniel Kvyat usually gets into Q1 these days. Not so good this weekend in the United States.
Well, you know, there were sanctions on him, on his performance.
Yeah. He's the new Magnussen. There's a lot of problems going on over there with these young drivers that I don't really see being a problem, but it is what it is. But in Q3, pretty exciting, I guess. I was happy for Valtteri Bottas in P3. I mean, we all know for the rest of the season, it's Nico or Lewis on pole.
Absolutely, unless there is a sandstorm in Abu Dhabi.
Correct. And all the sandstorms have been removed from the script.
There you go.
So, yeah, there are no more surprises. I mean, we're done with the surprises. What surprises me is when I see Adrian Sutil still in an F1 car. Those are the kind of surprises I'm talking about. And the surprise that maybe Fernando Alonso won't be in Formula 1 next year because, dadnabbit, we still don't have any news on Fernando, and we still don't have an official announcement from Ferrari about who is going to be at Ferrari next year.
I think the dust and the sandstorm will settle in Abu Dhabi. And
you believe that?
I think so. Yeah, and, you know, talking of qualifying Rosberg, and, you know, I have to say this guy has out-qualified Lewis Hamilton 10-7, which is very impressive as of Austin. I mean, out-qualifying Lewis in qualifying or outpacing him in qualifying is like beating Ayrton Senna or a Schumacher in the rain. You know what I'm saying? They are so good at what they do. So Rosberg, what he has been doing in terms of qualifying has been pretty impressive. Austin was his eighth pole of the season, but so far he has converted only two of those into victories. There is some improvement required here. And I'm very happy, not just because of the Williams team, but also the wonderful sponsorship they have from Martini and also for Valtteri Bottas, who I think is a very good driver. And Massa would like to leave Formula One on a high note. They are continuing to move up the grid and were occupied the second row, which was very impressive. Bottas out-qualifying Massa, that was pretty much expected. And you talk about surprises. Ricardo and Nando ahead of their respective teammates. Obviously, by now, it's no surprise.
Absolutely correct. Yep. We thought for a minute there that Kimi Raikkonen might out-qualify his loving Alonso, but it didn't happen. And there you have it. And still, for me, very confusing. Raikkonen stays a Ferrari, while Fernando is an unknown this fact.
That's mind-blowing. But K-Mag qualified 7th ahead of teammate Jenson Brazier in 12th. Oh, I'm sorry. I meant Jenson Button. And it will not be a surprise if Kevin is teammate to Nando at McLaren next year. But, you know, one guy that has surprised me, and I'm not sure what's going on with Mr. Nico Hülkenberg, he was outpaced by Sergio Perez. And I'm wondering if Nico has lost some steam. You know, this kid won a championship in every category on his way to F1, just like Romain Grosjean. And he won the GP2 in his first year, which very few drivers do these days. But it looks like, sadly, that his opportunity at a big team is now behind him. But as long as Dr. Vijay Mallya loves him, he will be in Formula One.
That is a sad state of affairs. It reminds me of when Kimi was chosen at McLaren and a young German who was promised a race seat and looked to have a great future in Formula One, really never made it to the top teams. Those things happen.
Yeah, and that young German was Nick Heidfeld.
Exactly, who now races in Formula E.
Yeah, he was electrifyingly pissed off at Nicolas
Correct.
Prost.
He's Correct.
He's race, right?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's very exciting stuff. You know, me in Formula E, like, two peas in a pod.
You are on the same grid, huh?
Absolutely. We're negative and positive.
ACDC, man.
Totally, dude.
Yeah.
So, no, very exciting stuff, but I was glad that Nico got a pole position. Of course, Lewis Hamilton, P2. It was a great front row. And I'm glad for Williams. You know, second row, that's exciting for them. This will sort of continue till the end of the season, I believe, because Williams is doing an outstanding job with the motor that they have. I think Kimi Raikkonen is going to be sleepy for the rest of the season as well. There are no more surprises. Let's face it. It's going to go down to the wire. Abu Dhabi is going to be the big one.
Yeah, and I really do not like this double point nonsense. But, you know, it is what it is. And the thing is, it's the same for all drivers, so cannot complain too much. Do you want to say something? You made a smarty pants comment about Adrian Sutil. He gave Sauber their first Q3 appearance of the season. And that's something very, very important for that team.
Oh, I know. But the irony of it, as soon as he does that, the team announces the signing of Marcus Ericsson and your cousin.
Yes, which came as a big surprise because I thought he might stay at Williams and get the seat when Felipe Massa leaves because, you know, Williams is sponsored by Petrobras, Brazilian oil company. We have more on this later in the show, by the way.
I understand. I was just kickstarting the excitement a little bit.
Yes.
Watching qualifying at the U.S. Grand Prix was exciting for you?
Absolutely. It's a fantastic track. You know, and what I really like about this track, Clark, it's kind of like Spa. You can walk around and see the race from different venues. And I did that last year and quite a bit this year. So this is if somebody is trying to go to this race or a Formula One race for the first time, this will be a mighty fine place to go, especially if you're living on this continent. I would suggest just buy general admission and move around.
Cardiovascular workout and Formula One in one package.
Yes, sir.
That's beautiful. Please continue with your experiences at the U.S. Grand Prix, especially on race day when the electricity is everywhere.
No, I was very impressed because, you know, I'm a fan of motor racing and especially Formula One and especially in the United States. I was very happy that there was a huge crowd. And of course, you know, when you talk to people, they're all from all parts of the United States, different countries, this and that. And I ran into there was a lady, everybody was looking at her. She was dressed up like you would be at the, like, you know, some of those like Victorian classical garden, you know, evening dress.
I like that.
So I said to her as we were walking towards the grandstand, I said, Miss, you have the nicest dress in town today. And she goes, oh, thank you. So she had a pretty strong accent. So I thought she was from South America. I asked her where she was from. And you won't believe what she said. She goes, I'm from France, and I live now in Santa Rosa, California.
Wow.
Pretty big racing Formula One fan, and I had a nice chat with her.
That's great. I was just having breakfast this morning at my local spot in Los Gatos, California, and sure enough, there was a young man wearing a shirt from the 2014 United States Grand Prix.
Did you chat with him?
Nope. Left them alone because some people are just sick and tired of the host of F1Weekly.com.
Who could they be? Mark Martin?
Him. Jeff Gordon.
And the Bush brothers, right? The NASCAR Bush brothers, not the
Yeah, the Gorbachevs.
There you go.
Thank you. So, rest day was exciting. Did you get there early? Did you get a good seat? Did you walk around?
No, interestingly, no, I was hoping to go early, but, you know, I've been a little bit under the weather lately. So I just took it easy. And surprisingly, I mean, there was a crowd, but it was not like a 3-hour traffic jam kind of situation. So I parked my car at this private, you know, place called Blue House. And I asked the guy, how come this is called Blue House? He said, look at the color of the house. So I parked my car, $20 parking Saturday, $20 Sunday, and then they gave me a ride, which was nice, which was only like 5 minutes. It's actually a walking distance, you know, if you want to walk. So I've really enjoyed going here past two seasons. Just I enjoyed every race I went to Indianapolis. The thing is, you know, Clark, when you go to a racing event, like when I went to the Daytona 24 Hours a couple of years ago, and it's your first time and you're moving around and you have to talk to some people to gain access here, there, whatever. If you're treated nicely, you know, it makes a very nice experience. You know, what happened to me last year, I took a ride with my friend, Mr. Peter Nygaard from Grand Prix Photo. And then what happened, he was able to get in the media shuttle and he asked the driver, can he come with me? And then he just walked back and he said, sure. So next thing you know, I'm in the media area where I should not be. I ran into David Hobbs and Steve Mache there briefly. And met some other media people. So moving around has been very good, and I'm very, very pleased to have such a nice facility and environment for a Formula One race in the U.S.
Yeah, so were you surprised that with the safety car at the beginning of the race that it was Sergio Perez and not Pastor Maldonado?
You know, every lap that Pastor Maldonado completes, I'm surprised, and I hold my breath.
That's so beautiful, yes.
And there's more on this later also.
Yes, I hope so too.
You're pushing the right buttons today, including Jensen's.
Yes, I know. Well, Jenson Button has a lot of buttons. But no, I thought the Grand Prix was we had a great race. Unfortunately, Lewis Hamilton once again outfoxes the Fox.
Yes.
Very impressive stuff. How did you think of the safety car? And any thoughts on the virtual safety car?
You know, I did not pay much attention to that stuff. But, you know, with what has happened, unfortunately, to Jules Bianchi, motor racing world has no choice but to take this safety car situation or anything that happens on the track very, very seriously. It's just, it's the rude awakening.
There you have it. Now, I'm not going to do a lap-by-lap blow of the United States Grand Prix. I thought it was a great start for Nico Rosberg. You could almost see it coming with Lewis Hamilton catching him up. Now, we did have some good tussles between Fernando. And I thought Ricciardo did a great job holding up his own. what were the highlights for you being at the Grand Prix?
Well, you know, obviously, this day and age, if you get the pole, chances are you're going to win the race. And then the big thing comes getting the jump in pit stop, which I really don't like. I want races to be one-on races, you know, passing and all that. But at first part of the race, really, it was looking that Lewis Hamilton was going to stay behind Pretty Boy Floyd, and Rosberg was doing a pretty good job. But then, you know, Lewis being Lewis started closing in. And once he got very close to him, like within half a second, then I had a very strong inkling that we're going to see a pass. And sure enough, that was what happened. It has come to, like, no business as usual for Daniel Ricciardo to do very well. I'm very pleased the Williams are going pretty good. So we definitely want some regime change at the top of Formula One. But it's not going to happen this year. You and I both know that.
No, it's not going to happen this year, and it may not happen next year because, so far, Toto Wolff refuses to go along with lifting the freeze on the motor.
Yeah, and yeah, they've had some talks on, but, you know, Formula One teams being Formula One, they just cannot agree on anything.
If that's the case, we will see the exact same season next year.
Well, that will be very boring if there is no competition among the top two, three teams. Because if this is continues, then it's going to be another. Well, you know, we survived 4 years in a row for Red Bull, 5 years in a row for Schumacher and Ferrari. So I guess we'll just have to suck it up.
Yeah, I guess we will have to suck it up. But I'm disappointed with Mercedes being afraid of a little competition. I mean, come on. Just let Ferrari and Renault pick up the pace a little bit, and it'll be good for Formula One.
Well, you're right what you're saying, but what Mercedes is doing, you know, these rules were given for to everybody. If they have outfoxed everybody, I think it's for the other teams to catch up. I don't like penalizing success. You know what I'm saying?
I understand, but Mercedes had a leg up on everybody else because while they knew they weren't going to win anything in 2013 and obviously, Red Bull, Renault were going for this world championship, and Vettel was going for the world championship. And there was, you know, Renault was focused on that season and not developing the motor as they should have been, and Mercedes did. So that's my tip. You know, I'm just saying there's a little cheating. I don't trust those Germans. Gad damn it.
Wow.
Yeah, I've got a lot of problems, Nasser.
I can tell.
Yes, so that's my tip. I'm just saying it is what it is, but I thought the race at the U.S. Grand Prix, you know, I don't know, maybe it's me, but I think all those, from a television perspective, all those colors on the S's and stuff are a little bit distracting. I think they need to tone that stuff down a little bit. I mean, after a while, I couldn't figure out what was going on.
Well, it's all for the show, you know, but this is standard on all the tracks now. Paul Ricard started that tradition.
That's true. I agree. The Paul Ricard, I was the first one to criticize all that stuff going on in the background.
Even the Paul Ricard stuff?
Yes, I'm very sensitive.
Shocking.
No, the excitement for me in this race was seeing Daniel Ricciardo staying in there, getting on the podium. Felipe Massa once again burned at stake, suffering. But he did stay ahead of Valtteri Bottas. Fernando Alonso starts sixth, finished sixth, very consistent. Kimi Raikkonen finished his race in 13th, Nass. Did you see Kimi? Were his eyes shut, as I predicted?
Kimi Raikkonen, you know, like you said, Fernando Alonso, who gave Ferrari a victory the first time he drove for them, he gave them unbelievable victories. Took a car to the championship, which really had no business being there. Next year, he may not be there, and Kimi will be there. This is the guy they paid him $25 million not to drive for them some years ago.
Well, if you think about it, they're paying him $25 million today to sort of not drive for them, sort of. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Nothing's really changed.
Yeah.
It's an interesting relationship.
It is.
But, hey, we've seen interesting relationships in the past.
And, you know, as we have seen so many times when Button did not drive for Ron, how you cannot win, and we see it with Sebastian Vettel now. And I think if your prophecy comes true that if Toto Wolff does not give an inch, and they keep the dominating performance they have right now, you know, Sebastian Vettel will be looking for victory number one at Ferrari, maybe around Monza or Spa.
And you know what? I hate to say it, but you're absolutely right. Right now, Renault has showed some improvement. I think Red Bull will be a little more improved early on next season, possibly Daniel Ricciardo winning some Grand Prix like he did this year. I believe Toro Rosso will be up front as well. And I believe Ferrari will still be suffering. And there are already rumors that the new 2015 Ferrari is a pig.
Wow, a prancing pig?
With lipstick.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, let's hope it's from Gianni Versace.
Yes, let's hope so. But no, it's going to be a sad state of affairs next year, especially for Vettel. But you do get, you know, your free Ferrari cars and the glamour and the girls and the, you know, free access to the Pope whenever you want. So there are pluses.
And Niki Lauda's favorite, free spaghetti at every race.
Exactly. And we're not talking Chef Boyardee.
Oh, no, we're talking some serious Barilla stuff.
Exactly. So there you have it. But I did enjoy the U.S. Grand Prix. I was really happy for Pastor Maldonado getting first points this season. Hard to believe, but it's true. I don't know. I think Pastor Maldonado is going to finish this season on a high, Nasser.
Well, Clark, I got to tell you something. You know, we beat up on him, call him Crashado. The guy did set a new record in GP2, won a race in Spain over Nando fair and square. So he is quick, but he's erratic. You know, that's his problem. Same thing with Takuma Sato.
I know.
You know, I mean, look how he's going in American racing. He's quick, but he crashes all the time.
You know what I think? I think Ferrari would be better off with a Jenson Button than a Kimi Raikkonen.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it.
So we'll see what happens. But in the end, your experiences, even with the not-so-exciting engine noise, was there excitement at the race? Any interviews did you get at the Grand Prix? I mean, did you interview the janitorial service leader?
No, I couldn't get access to him. You know, we're low priority when it comes to Formula One. But I did have a nice, you know, dinner with Mr. Peter Nygaard. This is the gentleman with the Grand Prix photo. He supplies me photographs. And his daughter is like, she's 15, and she's also trying to get into daddy's business and taking some fantastic photographs. So I was talking to him, you know, which Grand Prix would be easier to get a media credential, and he will help us as much as he can. But probably looking at, you know, Spa. He said Spa would be pretty easy. You know, he says problem with Monaco, obviously everybody wants to be there. Then the first European race is Spain, that'll be hard. Italian is everybody wants to be at Monza and this and that. So I'm hoping, you know, maybe I can make a run to Spa again next year with media credentials. But we'll see what we can do, Clark.
Okay. Well, ALCH wins the U.S. Grand Prix. I'm sure you want to talk about this dramatic Grand Prix win.
Yes, and one thing I will say about, you talk about interviews, there was a support race for Porsche Cup. And it is very, you know, I'm a fan of motorsports, and we wish everybody all the best. It's interesting to see a lot of names these days in Porsche Cup or, like you said, Formula E, where drivers who had a lot of potential and everybody thought would make it to Formula One. And now you see them in Porsche Cup and this and that. But, you know, you got to keep doing what you need to do.
You got to pay the rent.
Exactly. Okay, now, LCH is the top Brit in GP wins. Lewis Hamilton made his dramatic Grand Prix debut with an impressive podium finish in the opening round of the 2007 season in Melbourne. His first victory came in Canada, which was followed by his first American success at the Indianapolis track. And since the legendary Fangio, LCH is the first driver to have won a race in each of his Formula One seasons, which is very, very impressive. Victory in Austin was number 32 for the Mercedes driver. This makes him numero uno for drivers racing for Her Majesty's service and glory. The previous record was 31 wins, R. Nige scoring his last victory in the 1994 Australian Grand Prix. And Nigel Mansell, you know, when Lewis broke his record, congratulated him through through Twitter. So he's tweeting, Nigel's tweeting. And, you know, there are far more races in this day and age compared to the 60s and 70s. But to be the top dog in the empire that has produced names like Stirling Moss, Jim Clark, Graham Hill, and Jackie Stewart, it is a massive, massive and a great, fantastic achievement.
Don't forget Mr. Bean.
There you go. What do you think about Hamilton being the most successful Grand Prix winning driver from Britain? I mean, this is serious stuff.
I know, it's exciting, but it's not like, you know, you know, us French think it's just way overrated.
Really?
Yeah, I'm still rooting for Trintignant.
Maurice Trintignant?
Yeah, le château.
Yeah. But the future of French motor racing is pretty good. You know, there is Esteban Ocon doing very well, and there is another guy who's also a very good young, Pierre Gasly. And these are the people I'll go and talk and do an interview because I think these are stars of the future. But going back to Hamilton's 32nd victory in Austin, it came in his 146 starts. He is now equal. This is very impressive. The guy who started like 7-8 years ago, he is now equal fifth on the all-time list with, you know, equal with amigo Nando, Fernando Alonso. And drivers ahead of him and or them are Vettel, fourth with 39 wins. Senna, third with 41. Second on the all-time list is your man, Professor Prost, with 51. And top of the heap is Michael Schumacher with 91 victories. So it's very impressive of these young new drivers, you know, be it Sebastian Vettel, Nando, or Lewis Hamilton, how they have really put themselves on the historical map of motor racing.
Yeah, but you know, you have to also think about this. Lewis Hamilton started at McLaren, a top team. Fernando Alonso started at Minardi.
But yeah, that's for sure. And you know, like we've already said, if you don't, you may be the greatest driver, but if you don't have the best package, you are going nowhere.
Exactly. FedEx is not going to help.
Yeah, nor will UPS. And, you know, check this out. I mean, you look at a couple of seasons like this for Lewis Hamilton. I mean, he may be sitting on 55, 60 Grand Prix wins. And a couple of seasons for Vettel with Ferrari, the way they are going this year. All I know is one thing. If Fernando Alonso cannot win a race at Ferrari, I don't think there's anybody else who can win a race with that car or a similar car.
Exactly. And you know what? I'm going to have a plaque made that says that, and I'm going to put it right there in Maranello.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. Now we come to your favorite. Crashado makes the news without crashing. Our amigo Pastor Maldonado qualified 11th in Austin, scored his first championship points since the 2013 Hungarian Grand Prix, where Gerard Lopez bought him a goulash dinner for finishing 10th. This was also the team's first top 10 finish since the Monaco Grand Prix way back in May. Remember last year how impressive this team was?
Yeah. Well, last year they were very impressive.
Pastor being – I mean, I remember last year Grosjean was chasing Sebastian Vettel at Austin for the win.
Yes. It was exciting.
Yeah. But Pastor being Pastor did survive 2 5-second penalties before finishing 9th. This is interesting. One penalty for speeding under the safety car and the second for exceeding the pit lane speed limit. Is there something that he cannot do?
I think win a world championship he's not going to do.
No, that I don't think is going to. For him to win a world championship, he will have to have Sebastian Vettel's car from last year and no teammate.
Exactly. Yeah. And he hasn't hit any shoes on the track yet.
Yes, but, you know, the low point was really crashing in Caracas at this demonstration that he was doing.
That was the best.
That was really pathetic.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. Okay, you know, Formula One is cutthroat and dog-eat-dog world, but sometimes it becomes frog-eat-frog world, as Romain Grosjean found out at COTA when he was hip-checked by fellow Francais Jean-Éric Wurne. The Toro Rosso pilot landed a 9th place finish, which was very good for Toro Rosso, but after Jev was given a penalty, he was demoted to 10th. Behind someone who would have been proud of this move, the aforementioned one and only Pastor.
That's beautiful.
Did you watch that move?
Yeah, it's exciting. I like that. Wham, bam!
Yeah. coming from nowhere. Hey, get out of my way.
That's my style.
Yeah, this was very good. And, you know, talking of Jean-Eric Vaughan, he was bummed out after he was let go. And now looks like he may stay at Toro Rosso. You know, one man's glory is other man's misery. Now Carlos Sainz Jr. is getting all not too thrilled that he may be passed over for Formula One. But, you know, that's the way it is.
No, the interesting thing is that now we hear Verstappen being pro Jean-Éric Vergne. And I think it's because he doesn't want to see Sainz Jr. in there hungry like a wolf.
Wow. But let me just tell you, talking about Max Verstappen, okay, here is more news on him. I was talking to my friend, Mr. Peter Nygaard, and he was telling me about, you know, the last time Verstappen drove a Formula One car at Suzuka, I believe it was. And he says to me, this guy is very, very good. And here is more news on him, not to just keep talking about Max. About a week ago, I was in a phone call for some, you know, racing-related information with Lars Kaufmann. He runs his dad's Joseph Kaufmann team in Formula Renault. And he said last year what they did is they tested Max Verstappen for 6 days, and he was all set to go with them in Formula Renault. And then Volkswagen stepped in and offered him a Formula 3 deal, you know, in some sort of a financial package.
Mm.
And he said these are Lars Kaufmann's words. He repeated to me, he is the best driver by far we have ever tested, which has included Nico Hülkenberg, this guy Stoffel van Dorn, Robin Freund. These are very, very good drivers, Esteban Gutierrez. And I said to him, is this guy for real? He said, this guy is the best we have ever tested. He must have a lot of natural talent. And, you know, some people adapt very quickly to things, and some people take half a season to figure out where the brake pad is. So I guess, you know, he's not the Brazil. He's not Dutch Rubinho.
I knew you were going to say Rubinho.
Yes. And I cannot believe what I'm reading lately, that Rubinho had a nice gig going on with Globo TV in Brazil to be their Formula One announcer. And he was chasing a seat at Caterham, and he got so busy that he lost that deal. And now he has to go to the clouds to drive a Caterham.
Unbelievable stuff. I mean, they had some problems with Rubinho at this global television company. One of the biggest problems, they told him, you have to say RBR. Don't say Red Bull, because when you say Red Bull, that's free advertising for somebody who gives us no monies. So say RBR. He couldn't handle that. Then he went and sneaked into the Mercedes paddock and had a talk with Toto Wolff, telling him that he should be their test reserve driver at Mercedes for 2015 because he still has what it takes to be El Machismo de Brasil.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This guy's nuts.
I mean, you know, yeah, let me tell you, if you read his pre-Formula One credentials, very, very impressive. But, you know, once you've driven for Ferrari many years, like Jenson Button is saying, look, you know, if I'm not with a team that can win, I don't want to be in Formula One. I mean, what can you achieve with the Caterham? I'm curious.
They just want to be around the glamour, the je ne sais quoi.
And, you know, these guys like Guido van der Garde, they are paying so much money to be third driver. If you were doing this in the 60s, 70s, and the 80s, it would be fine because, well, you know, what was happening, it's just like that Gilles Villeneuve, he drove a third car in the British Grand Prix, 77, first race, and out-qualified the team's number two driver, Jochen Mass. If you can do that, then obviously people are going to be interested in you. And in his case, he does one race, then he gets picked up by Ferrari based on performance. But these kids, you know, I mean, I feel sorry for them, but at the same time, I don't. I mean, if you're racing in World Series by Renault for 3 years, like, you know, this young Dutch kid who was setting new records one after another in karting, Nyck de Vries, and we wish him all the best. He took this year 3 years to win Formula Renault 2 liter.
Yeah.
So my question is to him and Guido van der Garde, if you're spending 3-4 years and you still have not won a GP2 championship, and you're spending your in-laws $18-15 million to become a reserve driver at Sauber, the way that team has been going, A, you're not going to drive a race, and even if you do, where are you going to go? What I read, the report was that Marcus Ericsson's backers have put $18 million on the table to get the Sauber seat. And let me just tell you the power of $18 million. For about $6 million, you can run with a top team in IndyCar racing. So he's spending three seasons of very good IndyCar experience to be confirmed back of the bus operation.
Yeah, and don't forget, the $6 million at the United States Indy operation gets lifetime free hot dogs.
Lifetime hot dogs, and even if you finish dead last at Indy 33rd, you'll pick up $200,000-$300,000.
I mean, exactly.
You can make money in American racing. There's no question. I mean, just look at the NASCAR drivers.
Yeah, absolutely. You should see the purse for, like, in the Indy 500. If you finish 27th, you're making good money.
You know, do you remember when Al Unser Jr. was driving the Domino's Pizza car?
One of my favorite cars.
Yeah, many years ago. Let me tell you what Domino's Pizza used to do. You know, they had this advertising thing, 30 minutes of free.
Remember? Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
What they used to do as a promotion at Indy, if you qualified 30th, you get $30,000, okay?
Yeah.
If you are leading on lap 30, you get $30,000. If you finish 30th in the race, you get $30,000. So there's a lot of money in American racing, which for a young kid, as in the case of Marcus Ericsson, who's not from a rich family, he can turn it into a professional racing career. But there's a lot of other drivers, you know, who are racing, and I can name quite a few. And I'm like, you know, dude. I mean, I'll give you an example. There is this kid from Colombia, Oscar Tunio. He's a pretty good racer. He's pretty quick. And there is this kid from Malaysia, Jasmine Jaffer, English kid, Will Stevens, and Filipino Marlon Stockinger. His father is Swiss. These are all very good kids and very quick, and they have done a pretty good job in their racing career so far. But the way Formula One is right now, where there are only like six seats available, these people have no chance to get into Formula One as a professional driver. Now, if Daddy wants to write a $20 million check to get them a seat, that's one thing. But these are the kids who can do a much better job going to Indy Lights or some junior series here in this country and hopefully get picked up by Penske's of the world or Ganassi's of the world. But that's just my 2 rupees.
I understand. I love your 2 rupees. Here are my 2 francs. Yeah. I suggest to people right now is start buying some Esteban Gutierrez hats, some Adrian Sutil hats. You even might try to find some Kamui Kobayashi hats or even Uje Ide hats. You could sell them on eBay in a few years for some money.
Yes. And let's talk about Jenson Button. He's on the Nowhere to Run, Nowhere to Hide program. Once the baby boy face of Formula One, the 2008 world champion was out-qualified and out-raced by rookie teammate Kevin Magnussen in Texas. More and more, each passing day, Ron Dennis and Eric Bouye must be looking like Texas hangman to JB. Looks like all is signed, sealed, and soon to be delivered to Woking is the hombre for whom Ron can only say, I've seen that face before, hanging by my door and my pit in Hungary. Do you remember, sir, Hungary 2007?
I do remember a fine young Fernando doing his best.
With his physio trainer giving the countdown to when to leave the pit. That's beautiful.
That was exciting, but that was good strategy. You have to think about it that way, Nasser. He's a highly competitive fella.
Yeah, that strategy cost him his 3rd world championship.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, no, and Ron Dennis was watching old Westerns in his hotel room during the U.S. Grand Prix.
There you go. Okay, next, You Give Me Nothing But Heartache. This is the song being sung by Esteban Gutierrez and Adrian Sutil, and especially after the announcement from Sauber that Marcus Ericsson and cousin Felipe Nasr will be their drivers for 2015. Now, Guido Fandegarde is also planning to join the class action lawsuit. Sutil was really pissed off, saying that they may have signed these drivers, but doesn't mean they're going to drive, doesn't mean the team will be there. Apparently, Sutil has a contract, which may be a contract like Jacques Villeneuve had when Sauber was bought out by BMW, and they tried every which way to get him out, and they realized that unless they pay him $20 million, he ain't going, so they just kept him. And Guido Vandegarde, you know, interestingly, I was told at Texas that Guido Brenda Gaudy will replace Esteban Gutierrez. And there were already rumors that Esteban will no longer be at Sauber. So I think this thing might get a little messy and some big cash will exchange hands before Marcus and Felipe Nasr can drive for Sauber.
That's true. But if our friend Mr. Slim gets involved, then Gutierrez could be back in town.
Yeah, it's interesting about success in Formula One. I mean, look at Romain Grosjean, Nelson Piquet Jr. They all did very well in GP2, and what happened to Piquet Jr., we will not repeat again, at least not on this podcast. But Romain Grosjean was kicked out, brought back, and he was brought back because the team owners were the same people who were owning the management team he was with, Gravity Management. But he paid his dues and made his mistakes and, you know, cleaned up his acts. And he's a pretty decent driver now in Formula One. But I would hate to see him lose his seat just because Esteban Gutierrez or some other driver bought a bag of dollars from, you know, whatever it is, phone company or oil company.
But, I know.
It's interesting, Clark, how this thing works out. I mean, you know, we've been following these young drivers for many years, and some of them we've had good access, and they've been very nice to us. But in terms of performance, you know, I'm looking at the Esteban Gutierrez case. 2 championships in 3 years in Europe. Fantastic. Comes to GP2, could not get the success that he was looking for, that was expected. Comes into Formula One. And your first, you know, barometer is your teammate. And if you look at his comparison with Adrian Sutil, who is not Ayrton Senna by any stretch of the imagination, he's not even overhauling him.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And same thing with Cousin. You know, when he went to GP2, just like Esteban, won 2 championships in Europe in 3 years, very impressive. And then when he came to GP2, he was on the podium on his first weekend, and I was so, so happy, you know, that this guy really is F1 deal, but it took him 3 years to get his first win. And if that happens, it doesn't mean he's not a good driver. But then, you know, the Ron Dennis's of the world, they're going to look at, well, do I take a guy who won his first GP2 race in his third year, or do I take somebody who won a GP2 race starting from the front row on his first weekend, which was Stoffel Vandoorne, who is already in the McLaren program. So it's the seats are very, very limited. And you just have to do what Max Verstappen did or something close to it to get a slot in Formula One. Otherwise, it's a slow boat to Brickyard or China or wherever you want to race.
Well, all I know is Adrian Sutil, his piano has been sent out for tuning. And I heard that he's been invited by the Crawfordville Philharmonic.
My goodness. So pretty soon he'll be known as Adrian Steinway.
Thank you very much. But at least he has a second livelihood he can fall back on, just like Kamui Kobayashi and his chain of sushi restaurants across the Pacific. So there you have it. I think it's exciting. I'm happy for them. But yes, there's too many people going on. We're losing teams. Hülkenberg has already been confirmed. Perez, I think he's going to stay. It looks like Vijay Mallya said, yeah, we're going to keep the guy. Because I think VJ likes the in-flight burrito. So it is what it is.
But his burrito does not have guacamole. It has some chicken curry.
Exactly. You know, they mess with the Mexican cuisine a little bit and add a little curry, a little marsala, and then bingo!
Yes.
That's so beautiful.
Oh, talking of in-flight burrito, when I was flying from Albuquerque to Houston, they had these small regional jets, you know, the Brasileira or Canadian, you know, Embraer jet and Canadair, like 60, 70 people all crammed in a small tube. And they were making announcement, you know, that for available, we also have an in-flight burritos for $9.
Wow. Did you ask for the F1 Weekly special?
No, that's only in first class on a 777.
That's true. That's very, very true. So it is what it is. Nasser, an outstanding job. I think I'm going to go right into 50 words on the U.S. Grand Prix from the boys on the forum. Okay, Kehe Sin says, Hamilton wins, Rosberg doesn't. Ricciardo is best of the rest. Been here before? Anyone? The real race took place lower down the diminished field, with Grosjean feeling quite racy and Alonso and Vettel providing a little entertainment as well. By way of further visual entertainment, the grid girls have every Texan stereotype heaped on them and get kitted out in more Stetsons than I've seen since the days of J.R. Ewing. Leon Bray. Lots of racing behind the front five. Dan shows some great overtakes, and Maldonado managed to stay out of trouble until right at the end. Lots of good racing through the field. Kimi drives like he knows Fred is staying at Ferrari, and he's not going to have a seat next year. They need to do something with some parts of that track to make it more visually appealing. The red and blue wavy stuff distorts the appearance of the bends that look great from the in-car cameras. Neon Zapper says, COTA is a great venue for overtaking. In action amid some unfortunate kablamos by other drivers, it was fun to watch Fernando's mint field position changes. Now, I'm beginning to see how double points could only add to the excitement of the season. Philip Pegler, another outstanding performance by Hamilton as Rosberg fails yet again. To seize the moment, more and more, this is looking like a second championship for Lewis, but this whole season could be trampled on by two large, heavy, and often aggressive animals. Yes, that's right. The championship could turn out to be a gigantic white elephant, courtesy of the gigantic pink elephant sitting in the corner of the room. Double points. Yay! Some yee-haw tactic midfield battles on this great track. I hope we don't get bogged down on this double points fiasco. It's double points for everybody, folks, and it's only double points for one race. An extra races points from 19 races, that's less than a 6% bonus. And last but not least, our junior member, Luis, says, Lewis passing Nico again and winning the race. Although one can see that the difference in speed and race performance is small between the Mercedes drivers, Lewis is very much in control and gets the result. He seems to be the better driver, and I expect him to win the championship. But it is not done yet. Fine season this is. And there you have it, Nass. Another outstanding job from the F1 Weekly Forum, guys. Nass, final thoughts? I mean, we already know what happened in Brazil. And if you want, we could talk about that.
Well, the Brazilian Grand Prix was fun. We shall do another podcast in a few days.
Absolutely.
Covering the Brazilian Grand Prix. Now we shall play our interview with Mr. Logan Sargeant, young American karting talent racing in Europe, doing very well. And this conversation was recorded when I was at Oschersleben in August. So my thanks to him, and please check out his website also.
Okay, folks, I'm here in Oschersleben, and Sargent is on call. Mr. Logan Sargent, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you.
Okay, now tell us a little bit about yourself. You are from Florida. What part of Florida you are from, and what the heck are you doing here in Oschersleben?
I live in Boca Raton, Florida, but now I live in Switzerland for racing. And I'm here in Oschersleben for the German Championships. And at the moment, I'm fourth in the European Championship, so that's next.
Living in Switzerland, life is tough for you.
Yeah, very tough, because I don't have the ocean and the weather. So, yeah, I moved away from all my friends, so it's difficult.
And I guess no gators in Switzerland?
Nope.
Okay, let's start with your racing life. How did you pick up interest in motor racing? Was there interest in the family, or you just saw some racing on TV and said, this is what I want to do?
Well, when we first started, my dad did a little bit for fun. And then for my fifth birthday, he bought me a go-kart, and it just got bigger and bigger. And now we're doing worldwide championships.
How old are you now?
13.
Wow, teenager.
Yeah.
Great. Okay, now how many years of racing did you do in the U.S.?
I think about 6 years in the U.S.
And what were your big achievements there?
In the U.S., I became the national champion, and I also won the Super Nationals in Las Vegas.
What year was that?
Multiple.
Oh, you've won many times there?
Yes.
Vegas is a cool place, right?
Yes, it's very, very nice, yeah.
Okay. Now, you're from Florida, which is the home base of National Association of Stock Car Automobile Racing, also known as LANASCAR. How come you did not develop interest in Roundy Round?
Well, I've grown up watching Formula One for my entire life. But now my brother is doing NASCAR, so I want to go the different way and try Formula One.
Smart guy. Okay, now, when you decided to come to Europe, how long you been here, and how did you pick the team?
Well, it's been 2.5 years I've been in Europe, and we saw that RFM was a great team. They were winning a lot, and they were the top team, so that's how we chose to come here.
Okay, what's the big difference between a karting scene in the US and Europe?
Well, the level is just completely different. It's way more difficult here. And there, I outgrew the level there, so in Europe it's very difficult.
It's difficult here because of the depth of the talent pool?
Yes, they're very good here, so I have to keep getting better.
So it's like a piranha pool. So in this piranha pool, are you at the top level, close to the surface? Are you bottom? Obviously, you're not sinking, which is good.
No. I'm actually, it's been really good this year. Like I said, at the moment, I'm fourth in the European Championship with one round to go. So we're going to try and win that.
That's right. And of course, this was part of German Championship. How did this weekend go for you?
Well, we started off really strong and we qualified third, but we had a problem in the second heat, which set us to start sixth for the first final. In the first final, we had another problem with the engine, and only managed to finish 14. But now we came back to 6 or 7, I think it was, and we were pretty much the quickest the whole race. So.
Okay, where about do you live in Switzerland, and are you studying banking?
I live in Lugano, Lake Lugano.
Parla italiano, signor?
No, not so good.
Are you learning?
Sorry?
Are you learning Italian?
Yes, in school they teach me.
And I am sure your goal is Formula Uno.
Yes, of course.
Okay. How long do you want to stay in karting in Europe before you go into single-seaters?
Well, I start testing this year.
Oh, really?
Yes, so it should be interesting. And then I won't start racing until, I think, 15, when the age limit is.
So what will you be testing these days?
I'm going to start with the Carlin Academy car, and then I'll move up to F4.
F4, cool. And I met Trevor Carlin yesterday at the Nürburgring. He runs a pretty good operation. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Formula One. You said you've been following all your life, those 13 years of motor racing life. Who was your first Formula One hero?
Well, I really liked Michael Schumacher because he just showed true talent. And I also looking back, I really liked Art and Senna.
Absolutely. Now, Michael Schumacher's son, Mick Jr., is racing here. How good is he?
He's very, very good, and I think he has potential to be in Formula One if he drives well.
Wow. Okay, this season we're having a great battle between Mercedes teammates. Who would you like to see win the championship?
Definitely Lewis Hamilton.
A good man. Okay, tell me what you like most about motor racing. The speed, the sound, the technology, or the grid girls?
I love everything about it. Everything.
Okay. Thank you for your time. Please give a message to our listeners. We have listeners all over the world, and tell them about your website.
One Weekly is the best program.
Thank you so much.
Logan, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, we are entering the wonderful holiday season, which means only one thing here in the Palatial Studios, and that would be our beautiful calendar sales that support this podcast and keeps the floors clean. the marble sanitized and deodorized in the Palatial Studios. So please, Nasser, let's get a little promotion out there
for
the calendar.
My many thanks to Toby for helping me out. He updates the Saison 73 website every year, so many thanks to him for that. The calendar theme this year is for 2015 is Samba and Tango, the Latin beat of Formula Uno, and we have fantastic photographs, Lotus 72 gold leaf colors from Montjuic Park with Emerson Fittipaldi on the cover. Back cover, we have Ayrton Senna da Silva in his McLaren Honda. And then we have Pedro Rodriguez, Ricardo Rodriguez, Pastor Maldonado, Monty. Then we have, all the great legends that came from South America, Fangio, Jose Froline Gonzalez, Carlos Reutemann, Carlos Pache. So, a lot of time was spent in gathering information, selecting the beautiful photographs. So we look forward to support from F1 Weekly Familia members.
And if people want them right now, just email us.
Yes.
And we'll take care of business.
Very true.
Absolutely. And, of course, for a minute there, I thought you might have gotten that picture of me in my flamenco outfit playing the castanets.
I will have to start a new calendar now.
Yeah, that would sell, Nasser. That's the big bucks. Down. Exactly. So, yes, please order calendars now. Email Nasser or myself, whatever, info@f1weekly.com. And Nass ships in one business day.
Yeah, well, I'm in ABQ now, so it might take a few additional days, but they will get there within 2 weeks for sure.
Outstanding.
We ship them out by priority mail within the U.S. and first class airmail overseas.
And what is the price of this beautiful calendar, Nasser?
It was last year, senor.
Wow, we didn't raise prices?
Not yet.
You know, that shows that we are not only wonderful, but humanitarians as well.
Absolutely. We try to be, despite all our animal instincts.
Exactly. So, yes, looking forward to that. Yes, please order your calendars. Don't forget, Mom wants two of them. Nass?
Yes, sir.
I'll see you next week at the Palatial Studios for the Brazilian podcast. We'll be giving Brazilian wax treatments for free for whoever shows up.
Brazilian carnauba wax.
Exactly. Wow. So there you have it, Nass. Thanks for listening, everyone. Good night.
Bye-bye.